A cloud-based storage service is having trouble remembering the past few months. Another cloud-based storage service is under mass exploitation, and you know we've got the latest OpenAI news for you. All this and more on today's episode of MSP Dispatch.
Today's episode is presented by RejectionCon.
RejectionCon is upon us. It's almost here, December 12, 13, 14. Go to RejectionCon.com. Right there is where it is. That is the link. It's a pay-what-you-can model. Do you got $0? Come on in. But I'm asking you to give more. Why would Wes be asking you to pay more? 100% of conference pass proceeds go to the Rural Tech Fund, investing in underprivileged communities inside the United States, revolutionizing the lives of children and their families by giving them a new hope and a new future. RejectionCon is about the rejected ones. It's about the square pegs and round holes. Look at some of these talks right here. We've got so many awesome talks never heard before content. So get in on this. RejectionCon.com, December 12, 13, 14. I'll see you there.
Welcome to MSP Dispatch. Today is December 1st, and we are your source for news, community events, and commentary in the MSP channel. I am Matthew Francis Fox, and I'm here with my just awesome co-host, Tony Francisco. Tony, how you doing this morning?
I am excellent, excellent, excellent. I just got a Tesla, and now I'm just being made fun of, and more importantly, educated that the car can make fart noises, and change my car horn to a meow, which I will do for the record.
I feel like there was someone our age somewhere in the mid-1980s that wrote that down in like a third grade notebook and just made it happen.
And then just said, you know what?
It's it. It's my time.
You know what? I'm going to eat ice cream in the middle of the day. Why? Because I'm an adult now. Yeah.
That's right.
I'm going to make a car that meows and farts.
Boom. That's right. That's it. I'm going to keep as many ketchup packets as I want in my dresser because I'm an adult and it's time to get into the news.
Let's do it. Jumping straight into my first story from bleepingcomputer.com, Google Drive users are angry over losing months of stored data. Google Drive users are facing frustrations as recent files have just vanished and appear to have been replaced by an April to May 2023 snapshot, as reported on Google support forums. Activity logs show no sign of user-initiated deletions, and that confirms that users didn't delete them. Messages in Google's support forum include customer frustrations and responses that do not offer a solution. A quote coming in, "I pay extra each month to store folders in the cloud so that it's safe. So it is devastating that all my work appears to have been lost." And similar messages can be found among posts related to the problem. At the same time, a separate glitch reported on November 22nd adds to the frustration, preventing some users from accessing files for the past 6 months. Volunteer support agents mention an ongoing investigation by product engineers cautioning against making folder changes. Additionally, users are encouraged to explore additional cloud services until a resolution is reached. So let's unpack this, Matt, because I hear stuff like this and two things. Don't host anything, put it in the cloud. It's totally taken care of. I may have been incorrect on that last statement. So give me your thoughts on that.
This story, honestly, as you were reading it, my face started getting hot out of frustration. There are two different ways I want us to look at this. One, as people in the MSP space, as IT professionals, and as people that are going to have, I don't know if you could hear that, but that was me knocking on a Synology with, I don't know, 30 terabytes of storage or whatever it is above my desk, because that's what we do. We have best practices that we put in front of the businesses that we serve, and quite often we practice them ourselves, even when we're no longer at an MSP. Now, what upsets me about this is go find another provider. We don't really have a solution yet. Those are the things that the average consumer is hearing right now. The average consumer that is going to trust a service like Google to take care of their photos. You know, my Aunt Sandy's got photos of me when I was five, I'm sure, in Google Drive or something like that. Those are the people that I think are at the most risk here. And to not be able to have a level of support that's going to give them some level of assurance when, and let's be real, I mean, I'm a Google One subscriber. They kind of bill it as backup to a certain extent. And to your average person that's not working in MSP, that's going to feel like a perfectly viable solution. until it's not.
I want to know what the solution is. I think right now what we're looking for is, and this would be me, because this is the way I negotiate. Let's be crystal clear on this. This is not a negotiation. This is a notification. We're pissed. give me my data back.
Your data back?
That was really funny.
Actually, it's not funny because I can't get the thing to close.
Oh, is it? What
you're going to have to help me after the episode.
Was that a 4 or 6 terabyte drive? What was that?
This is a 4 terabyte drive, and I forget this. It's like a 1517 Synology or something like that.
Nice.
And I just knocked on it. Now it's not going to close.
Now
real time bloopers, folks.
So what I'm interested in understanding is, what is Google going to do about this? Because they have the data. The question is, what happened to that? And was it from a layer perspective, mm-hmm. meaning everything within this time frame was removed? Was it sectional? Was it everyone in that section at that particular layer? Was it something that was initiated and then stopped? And the question is, how did they know to stop it? Why did they stop it? Who stopped it? And when you start looking at all these questions, because things don't just randomly happen.
No,
things happen because they're initiated. And going back to one of the other stories we were talking about before about AI is programmed basically to automate what we understand. And for it to come to conclusions decisively of something that we don't understand is an evolutionary period based on structures that are still within the construct of the things that we program. Consequently, there will be minimal evolution occurring, but nothing, no massive catharsis is going to happen inside, whether they expose something that we've never considered before. Mm-hmm. There will be incremental processes, and no matter what, those processes will be documented. That exact same thing happened here. Something led up to the execution of the deletion of and the stopping of the deletion of that data. So I want to know where that came from, mm-hmm. and is this related to something on an AI level inside their organization that created efficiency? There's so many questions I have about this, but it is terrifying. It's horrific. This could be the keystone to an avalanche of other things that we uncover, or the foretelling of cloud storage.
Absolutely. And I tell you what, Google said, go find another cloud storage provider for the moment while we're going through this problem. And we've got another story in one of those. So I'm going to get right into it. And in my first story, OwnCloud vulnerability with maximum 10 severity score comes under mass exploitation via Ars Technica. Security researchers have detected mass exploitation of a critical vulnerability in OwnCloud, a widely used open source file sharing server app with a severity rating of 10. For reference, we're talking about CVE-2023-49103. By accessing a particular URL provided by a third-party code library used by the app, attackers can reveal sensitive configuration details, including passwords and cryptographic keys. This essentially grants the attackers administrative control over a compromised server. Since the public disclosure on November 21st, a surge in exploitation attempts have been observed with 13 IP addresses identified by Graynoise. To track these attempts, researchers utilized honeypot servers simulating vulnerable OwnCloud instances. Security expert Kevin Beaumont provides a detailed view of the vulnerability, emphasizing that it was introduced in 2020 and isn't exploitable by default. However, according to Shadow Server, over 11,000 IP addresses worldwide host OwnCloud servers, raising concerns of the widespread impact and potential harm of this vulnerability. Further, OwnCloud plans to implement additional security measures in future releases to prevent similar vulnerabilities from being exploited. Now, Tony, I was an OwnCloud user early on, probably around 2010, 2011, something like that, and it was a great service. I eventually outgrew it, and this story kind of hurts a little bit. I'm looking at it, and I'm hearing things about third-party libraries being the attack vector, essentially, and that makes me wonder what OwnCloud's been doing for the past 5 or 6 years since I've seen them. What are your thoughts? Have you dealt with OwnCloud before?
I have, and dabbled with it, not as much as you, but we have talked about that security vector. An attack surface is not something that is physically attached to the item that you're looking at. It could be a reference point, a dependency outside of what you're currently, the tangible item that you're looking at. And the byproduct of that is anything is slipstream into the consumption of X, whatever the X is the application, is the service, whatever, because it's an external dependency. And that goes for Java libraries. Like, there's a variety of external references that we've talked about here on the show. And it terrifies me because I don't have a way of, there's no vector for me.
I can see. You know, it's like your spoiled milk just ruined my cup of coffee. And I had no clue that was going to happen.
It reminds me, frankly, what it reminds me of is the old 70s Batman where if you use, lipstick plus this deodorant, boom, you die, you know, like, but the lipstick, nothing there. The deodorant, nothing there. You need the right combination and it's killing people off because of the combination. How do you, well, now what? Like, how do you find this vector? Well, by itself, everything looks okay, but you need to look in these external libraries that are continually changing. Now, you need to understand how the library is being consumed by X, whatever you're consuming. I'm just going to be blunt about this. It's terrifying to me. It's nebulous.
To me, what I'm hearing is a company that doesn't, and I'm not being to be accusatory. I don't know them. This is us looking at a story from the outside. It sounds like a company that's not really that great with dependency management.
Well, you've got, look at all of your source code and the validation tools that are out there for source code. And then you have the ability to validate the dependencies. No, you cannot validate all of Google's JavaScript library. No, they're not going to allow you to do that.
I hate to cut you off, but I think I got the perfect example for our audience, given that we're all technical individuals. Who has actually sat here and maybe installed an NPM module and then audited every single dependency that you come up with?
Not a single person on this planet. This is my point. Yeah. Like, I don't think people understand. So think of it like this. I bought a new car. Car's great. However, it's the, when I go through a car wash, I didn't research that the particular detergent that they use affects the particular paint and finish that I have. I'm just kidding. But then it destroys it. And you're like, how would I know that? How, I just got a car. It's a great new car and it works. It does exactly what it's supposed to do. How am I supposed to review every possible thing that it is going to react to, because those are just normal everyday uses. It's impossible to do that. And how are you going to react to when you push your shopping cart that somebody else had some type of perfume and then they held it, now you're allergic to that perfume? And things are going to happen, but it's almost impossible. I just don't see a way to create a vector to isolate these and restrict these items anytime soon, and they terrify me. But I'm pretty sure that we're going to see more of this problem.
Yeah, and you know what? I love when you get terrified. It's something I don't know why. Maybe it's because it's Friday and I'm going to have fun. But you know what we're going to do? We're going to get into an AI story next. How about that one? That's going to terrify you, I promise.
Ooh, okay, maybe let's do it. And jumping into my next story from TheVerge.com. Microsoft joins OpenAI board as Sam Altman returns as the CEO. And it is expressing excitement and gratitude while acknowledging support during uncertainty and highlighting the importance of coming back in resilience. Furthermore, OpenAI welcomes Microsoft as a non-voting board observer, indicating increased visibility without voting rights and offering insights into Microsoft's participation in OpenAI's decision-making process. Co-founder Greg Brockman returns as president and Mira Murati reverts to CTO after an interim CEO stint. The board, chaired by Brett Taylor, with Larry Summers and Adam D'Angelo, Quora's CEO, raises eyebrows due to potential competition with Quora's post-service hosting ChatGPT and GPT-4. In the same official statement, OpenAI's newly appointed chair, Brett Taylor, confirmed OpenAI's commitment to improving governance structure, building a diverse board, and stabilizing OpenAI. So where this is now December 1st, but is almost December 1-3, as in Friday the 13th. It's haunting me. It's haunting me. It's haunting me. It's so close. It's literally just a three away. This could have been something horrific. But now Sam Altman's gone. He's back. The board's gone. but the board's there with some kind of competing stuff. Microsoft's involved, but Microsoft has 49% of us, but they can't say anything, but they're the ones who hired Sam Altman in the beginning, but the new board members are already raising concerns about the existing environment, which originated ironically from the former CEO, which is now the CTO. There's so many moving parts right now. I feel like this is a Days of Our Lives episode, and somebody's marrying someone else, but the brother is actually the father of the uncle, which I don't, from the guy across the street.
And in breaking news, Sam Altman just became the CEO of Del Taco.
And Sam Altman is pregnant now with Microsoft's baby. So the irony, I think that's actually closer to. So what are your thoughts about Microsoft being involved in this process with non-voting right? Is there any validity to that? Is that just a is that a red herring? There's really nothing there people should be concerned about, or is it really something?
I think it's interesting. I don't know if it's concerning. I think the CEO of Microsoft, if you recall last time you and I were here together, we were talking, I was praying to be on the cell phone as if I was him, like, hey, don't worry, we got this. They got it. They caused enough of an uproar to A, get Sam, B, lose the guy, still have 49% control, which is not a controlling stake, but it's significant, and now have a spot on the board. I don't care if they're muted. I don't care if they've got a muzzle on. They're sitting there. They're listening, and they're going to be able to make influential comments, decisions, and actions outside of the boardroom. That's what I see happening, and I think that's why they're taking it as a big win.
I feel like Sam Altman has the ultimate, as opposed to losing political power, I think he has the ultimate political power. I firmly believe that there is an aspect to a true leader not being told what to do by amateurs of any stripe. The board had a stint of emotions that was not backed by anything substantial, removed him, and now they're gone. And now Sam Altman is back, which tells me that he has a vision and a goal, a direction. Yes. So my question is, since Microsoft pushed him back in, what is that goal? How is that competing with Claude.com? How is that going to be influencing the structure the ethics committee for AI in the future, because this is clearly the tip of the spear when it all comes down to large language models. What other large language models is he working with to move things in the right direction? But the question is, what is that direction? There's so many questions that I have, Matt. What are your thoughts on this before we wrap this up?
You just put so many questions in front of me. I don't even know. I want to start talking about AWS or something instead. I'm telling you this. But ultimately, I think that the dude, it wasn't even like he intentionally had a power play, but that was one hell of a power play that just went on. And it really cemented him as like the dude of AI. You know, he's like the Big Lebowski of AI at this point. He's going to be sitting at his desk with his white Russian on the rocks or whatever it is, making some things happen. And he's going to have his friends over at Microsoft backing him up. And I think in many situations, and who knows what that's going to lead to. Only time will tell. I'm going to say this, clarity on OpenAI and everything right now is nothing more than a function of time. And that's it.
Well said. You know what we should do?
Notables.
Notables.
Yes. And in my first notable, Microsoft shares temp fix for Outlook crashes when sending emails from Bleeping Computer. Microsoft is addressing a recurring issue causing the Outlook desktop app to crash when sending emails from Outlook.com accounts. Users have reported problems on Microsoft's community website and social platform since November 20th. And despite attempting common troubleshooting methods like restarts and profile changes, the issue remains unresolved for Outlook for Microsoft 365 users in the current channel preview. While Microsoft promises a fix in upcoming builds and advises a temporary workaround, revert to an earlier version through command prompt commands. The company is actively working on resolving various Microsoft 365 issues, including recent something went wrong, sign-in errors, and attachment delays in the Outlook desktop app. And in my next notable, Google Drive for iPhone adds built-in document scanner. This is coming to us from 9 to 5 Google. Google Drive introduces its redesigned document scanner to iPhone and iPad users. Accessible through the new camera floating action button, FAB, above the plus sign, the scanner offers automatic or manual capture. The camera assists in positioning the document for optimal scan, supporting back-to-back shots for multiple page documents. Users can adjust boundaries, rotate, and apply filters before saving. In addition, machine learning suggests relevant titles based on content, and users can choose the PDF storage location before uploading. This feature is now available in version 4.2023.46227 for all Google Workspace customers and users with personal Google accounts.
In my first notable mention from TechCrunch.com, a story that was referred to me by Amy Carr, a good friend of mine at SaaS Alerts, Okta admits hackers access data on all customers during a recent breach. In a recent blog post, Okta, a U.S. access and identity management company, revealed that data on all of its roughly 18,000 customers was accessed during a recent breach of its support systems. Initially, Okta had communicated that only 1% of its customers were impacted. The breach, discovered on September 28th, involved a hacker running and downloading a report containing data belonging to all customer support system users. While most customers had only full names and email addresses accessed, some may have had phone numbers, usernames, and details of employee roles compromised. Okta's CSO, David Bradbury, stated that while there was no direct evidence of active exploitation, there's a possibility that threat actors may use the access information to target Okta customers through phishing or social engineering. Okta assures no government customers were affected in this breach, and its Auth0 support case managed systems remain unaffected. In my next notable mention, from 9to5mac.com, OpenAI's ChatGPT voice feature is now available to all free users, expanding beyond its initial release for paid subscribers. Co-founder Greg Brockman announced the rollout on Twitter, encouraging users to try the two-way voice interaction, which offers different ChatGPT experiences. To mitigate potential risk of voice synthesis, OpenAI focuses on text-to-speech conversations using human-like audio generated from text and a few seconds of sample speech. The feature, accessible on the iPhone app, allows users to choose from 5 different voices and sync GPT history across devices. Demand is currently high, and users may experience delays and occasional failures with the tool.
And now a clip from this week's episode of AI Roundup. What up, y'all? I am Phil Buck, your host of AI Roundup, a weekly digest of everything AI related. And this week, I want to thank Matt Fox, the creative director at MMN, for sending this article from Variety my way. Sports Illustrated has been called out for articles written by fake AI-generated reviewers, and when they were confronted about it, they deleted the content. This Variety article actually references a story from Futurism, which is absolutely amazing. Shoutouts to Futurism for doing actual journalism, unlike Sports Illustrated, in this case, and their publisher, The Arena Group, which is actually the bigger story here. This scandal is not just about a couple of phony profiles on a sports magazine's website. It's a deep dive into the murky waters of AI-generated content and the erosion of journalistic integrity. Drew Ortiz and Sora Tanaka, supposedly an avid outdoor enthusiast and a fitness guru, respectively. Oh, and writers for Sports Illustrated. Turned out that they are nothing more than figments of artificial intelligence. Their biographies, while convincing, were completely fabricated, and their photos available for purchase on a website selling AI-generated headshots. The description of Drew Ortiz as a neutral, white, young adult male with short brown hair and blue eyes straight from the AI image website is almost laughably generic. What am I doing making YouTube videos? I should be selling AI-generated profile pictures. This is crazy. There are plenty of amazing upcoming events taking place across the community, so let's see what's happening this week. On December 4th through the 6th, an in-person event, GrowCon 23 in Clearwater, Florida. And also on the 4th at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, Cybersecurity Predictions for 2024, presented by ThreatLocker. And then on the 5th through the 6th, another in-person event, Women of the Channel in New York City. And coming from the MSP Media Network this week, we have, just right after this episode at 11 a.m. Eastern, MSP Community Live with episode 19. And then after that at 12, Bits and Books episode 4, we'll be taking a look at the book They Ask, You Answer. And then to finish the day out strong at 5 p.m. Eastern time today, 38 at 38, episode 19, we'll welcome Jeff Marzik of All Covered.
Hi, I'm Aaron, and I'm a jobaholic. We all have something in common. We all have a worst job story. Each episode, I'll welcome one guest to share their most insane worst job story. And in return, I'll share one of mine. Join me the first Friday of every month for new episodes of 38 at 38.
So folks, how'd you like today's show? If you like it, as usual, please hit that thumbs up button. If not, hit it any odd number of times, 3, 7, 5, whatever you want. 11's a good number too. And if you want to hear more from us, go ahead and hit that subscribe button on YouTube or your favorite podcatcher. Did you know that we have a Discord where we post stories all week? All week, 7 days a week. And you can propose your own stories for dispatch by posting them right in our Discord. So be sure to get in there and, you know, have some fun. As my friend, as Ray's friend, as everyone's friend, it's literally star.star, if you will, friend. Rich Banky says, make sure to tell a friend. Also, be sure to follow us on social media at MSP Media TV. Have a question? Send us an email at news@mspmedia.tv for answers on the next episode, or leave us a voicemail at 8333-MSP-Network. That's 8333-MSP-Network. I always love saying 800 numbers two times in a row. I guess it's like, you know, as seen on TV. Tony, today was a great one. We talked a little bit about one cloud that wasn't working, another one that wasn't working, and then AI. It's almost like the three major food groups of MSP dispatch. Well, no, we didn't.
That was really funny. Sprinkle with paranoia and
MFA day.
One of the things that we also did was change the format a little bit. So for all of you watching, there's actually another story kind of slipstream in throughout the week. I don't know when we're gonna start spinning up shorter, bite-sized little tic-tac size. It's like a tic-tac without the Chinese government watching what you're eating. It's like a small size. A small size of information in the format. And I think we're going to try to keep them to like 5 minutes versus right now we have 25 minutes. And although we love the listeners and we get a lot of good feedback, some people just want a quick story just in between while you're waiting between calls so you can stay up to date with what's going on.
Some people want a meatball parm. Some people want a Pop-Tart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's it. I like both. And with that, folks, Tony, everybody, have a great weekend.
Be safe, everyone. Stay educated.
This has been a broadcast of the MSP Media Network.
Microsoft shares temp fix for Outlook crashes when sending emails. Microsoft shares temp fix for Outlook crashes when sending emails. See? Give me all your money.
To mitigate potential risks of voice, that's a Merry Christmas. I just got a sweater that says that, by the way. Okay, ready?